session number 23149, Reel 2.
Mr. Pat Sensum, Reel 2. Would you have done aerobatics at this stage?
Yes, which I was no good at all. We did aerobatics. You couldn't do very much in a tiger moth. You did loops and stall turns and steep turns. But the thing I couldn't, I just never, ever managed, was the roll. I would, you know, I'd get on my back and then I'd pull the stick back and half loop out, you know. And I did my instructor, Lieutenant Scoomby, an Afrikaner, used to scream and swear at me. Terrible. He shouted and bellowed at me about this. But I just could not go on to fly upside down.
Would there have been a problem with it being open cockpit?
I think it might have been, yeah. But I never had to fly upside down after that, you know. But I was absolutely no good at aerobatics. And it was when I passed out at Potchefstroom, they had an assessment form, and it said, is this man suitable for, I think it was, transport? It was yes. Bombers, yes. Fighters, definitely not. He'd written it after that. So that was that.
Somehow that was fortuitous because of what you wanted to do.
Oh yes. I didn't mind what I flew. I mean, when I finished up, I had about 25 different aircraft in my logbook. But I never got on with aerobatics. And I still can't.
Would you say that mainly you wouldn't have needed it, would you, aerobatics?
Well, as a fighter pilot I would have done, but of course, as a bomber pilot, you tried not to do aerobatics.
Was it easy enough to grasp formation flying?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I found it so, yeah. When I finished at Potchefstroom, I was sent to an air school at Kimberley, which was just off the, I don't know what desert is it? Is it the Kalahari Desert? I don't know. For advanced training, that was on Airspeed Oxfords, which is a twin-engined aircraft, a trainer. And again, that was a bit longer. I think I was 4 months at Potchefstroom. I was 6 months at Kimberley, and the object there was to give you your wings, get you your wings. And we had quite a big dropout rate, but I was lucky and I went through and got my wings.
Could you describe what that entails?
Well, you had to do a lot of air exercises. You had to do cross countries. You had to do blind flying, which meant you flew with a hood over yourself, so you couldn't see the ground when there was an instructor with you, and you had to fly a set course. You planned the course before you took off, and you had to fly that, and then should have come back to the airfield, and that was quite a difficult thing I found, but the rest of it was just flying, just getting the hours in. And I think I had about 80 hours when I got my wings. I think it was about 80 hours. I'm sorry, I can't be more accurate.
Was there a ceremony?
Yes, there was a passing out parade. And I was a bit disappointed. I think I was in line for the Victor Ladora. For the course, but I didn't. I came second. I was beaten by a chap who was a marvellous chap called McLaren. I can see him now. He was much older than I was. He was about 25, 26, And he was an absolutely natural pilot, and one of the nicest people you could meet. And he got it. And but anyway, I felt I did reasonably well.
Well, to come second.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Would that chap have gone on to fly fighters?
I don't know where he went. I think he went up to the Middle East. Because there again, I was lucky. We were posted to Durban. The whole course from the air school was posted to Durban. And everybody was posted off except five of us. And we couldn't understand why. But one of the chaps was the son of an air marshal. And he got in touch with his father. And the father didn't know why. And why we were still stuck in Durban while everybody else had gone up to the Middle East. And the clerk had turned over two pages at once. Now, again, I was lucky because the rest of the course, I know, went to the Middle East, and they suffered some very, very heavy losses. Whereas I came back to the UK and then went out to Burma, where casualty rate was very, very slight, so, you know, I seemed to have a charmed life.
Would you have made close friends out in South Africa?
I'm sorry?
Would you have made close friends in South Africa?
I made some very close friends at Kimberley, and some very, very nice people. He was a manager at the diamond mine there, De Beers Diamond Mine. I remember he took me through the process, you know, and I had the biggest hole in the world at Kimberley, where they were mining diamonds, and they were very nice people, lovely people. And they had a daughter with whom I got on very well, and they were very nice. Made a great fuss on me, which was very nice, of course. Yeah, but I haven't did keep up a correspondence with them, I'm afraid, afterwards.
What was the food like out there? What was the conditions?
Beautiful. The conditions were, well, they were austere, I suppose, but everything was beautifully clean, and of course you had to keep your room very tidy. The only thing that I remember from my time at Kimberley was we used to have formal dinners once a month, and we had South Africans training with us. It was a terrible thing. One of these dinners, we were sitting there, and the bearers brought in, the servants brought in the food and were carrying melon. And I remember quite an old chap, who was African, of course, tripped and spilt the melon on one of the South Africans' uniform. And this South African got up and he thumped him. I remember it absolutely like it was yesterday. And we just pulled him away, and he was arrested and all the rest of it. But it was just instinctive. This poor old fella. Anyway, that was just one thing. But the food was excellent. It was a lovely, better food than I'd ever had in my life, I think. And of course, things that I'd never had before, like avocado and pineapple and as many oranges as you could eat, and bananas. It was lovely.
Other than the diamond mines, what sort of recreation would you have had?
We played a lot of rugby and table tennis and tennis and so on. But I don't recall having a lot of spare time at Kimberley. We were at it most of the time, or in classes.
Did you really enjoy the flying and you know, being putting in the hours, was it something that you were extremely enthusiastic about?
Oh, I loved it. I would have. I remember I used to if for some reason someone was ill or something, and I'd be first in the queue to, you know, take the plane up and fly around a bit, you know. That was great. I loved flying. It was I still do, really.
But I suppose out there in South Africa you wouldn't have had a lot of bad weather flying the way you get here.
No. There was the odd thunderstorm, but you could see it coming, you know. Nothing like a mass of black clouds you get in this country, just the odd one. And you could see it coming, and you sort of avoid it. Because you either landed or you went round it or something, you know. No, I had no experience of bad weather flying at all.
What were your feelings when it was time to set out for the UK again?
I don't know. I suppose I was a bit cocky, really, I suppose. I'd just got my wings, you know, and I had them on here. I wasn't commissioned. I was a sergeant pilot at that time. I was quite pleased. We came back by boat. And it was a very old Polish boat called the Pulaski. But the food was absolutely marvellous on there. And we were in the first class. So it was great.
Would you describe your uniform at that stage?
Oh, it was just ordinary blue battle dress, the top and the trousers. Or, of course, we had khaki shorts and khaki shirts. But it was when we got to the UK, it was just a blue shirt, black tie, blue battle dress. When we got to the UK, I was sent to Harrogate, which was a sort of holding unit. And then I got commissioned, and I got my first uniforms there, which, again, I was very proud of.
How different was that from what?
Oh, that was much different. It was a properly tailored jacket with four buttons, I think, here, and it was tailored, and it was and you had a peak cap and a fore and aft side cap, so it was a good deal different. And of course, it was Balthea. It wasn't I don't know what it was, serge. The battle dress, but it was Balthea, which was rather nice.
Can you recall the date that you left South Africa?
Yes, it was early 1943. It was about a month or so after I got my wings, and I think I got my wings in early 1943. And it took about a month to get back to the UK. And that's when I was commissioned at Harrogate.
Would you have made contact with your family when you arrived back?
Oh, yes. They all seemed very proud of me. And I flashed my uniform around. I wasn't there for very long. I suppose I had about a fortnight's leave after Harrogate, and I was sent from Harrogate to on a funny sort of assignment. A few of us went. We were sent to Perth in Scotland, and all we did was just fly. They said, "Well, there's some tiger moths. Just get the hours in." So for a month, we just flew all around the glens and over the mountains, as we thought of them then, and had just a jolly good time. And that lasted about a month, and then I was sent to Blackpool again for re-embarkation to India.
And this was 1943?
This must have been late Yes, it was. It was 43. Must have been about September time, I think. I don't know about that. Yeah, September time, I think. And in October, we landed at Bombay after a very pleasant trip. Of course, we were officers. And we were treated very much better on the boat than I was going out to South Africa. And that was a lovely trip. It was like a cruise, really. And anyway, we landed in Bombay.
Would you describe the scene in the docks at Bombay when you landed?
Well, it was all, you know, just... I know I thought how untidy it was. That was the sort of feeling I got. A lot of people dashing about, carrying things and pulling things and so on. A lot of activity. There were a lot of freighters in the harbour, as I seem to remember. Because of course they're bringing munitions in for the Berber campaign. But I did get the impression that things weren't as clean and tidy as they were in South Africa. Very, very different from that.
Would you just describe what you did for the couple of months?
We went by train from Bombay to Calcutta. That's another story if you're interested. There was when we were on the Calcutta Express, and again, of course, with first class. And as we were pulling out of the station, there was an Indian chap screaming and bellowing and shouting just outside. He was screaming. It really was terrible. I thought, my God, someone's fallen under the train. So I almost instinctively pulled the communication cord and stopped the train. The chap had all he'd done, he'd left his bag on the train. But an inspector came along and said, who'd pulled it? I said, I did. And I said, took my name, and I thought I was going to be in for a big fine. But I never heard any more about it. But I thought it was quite an achievement, pulling the communication cord on the Calcutta Express in Bombay Station. I can't remember what happened. I know we posted a bomb to Calcutta, and it was in Calcutta that I was allocated to 159 Squadron. But I can't remember what we did in Calcutta at that time.
When you travelled on that train, were you part of a squadron then?
No, I was part of the group of people I got to know quite well by then, you know, off the boat.
How many in the group?
About 10 or 12, and in that particular group. And the journey was quite nice, I know. It was, there were people hanging on the outside of the coach and so on, but not the first class coaches. They knocked them off, the first class coaches. But Calcutta, I found a very interesting place. I saw the sights and watched the racing on the Maidan in the centre of Calcutta. But I can't recall what else we did. And
would you have flown?
No, I didn't fly that time. But then I was posted to a place called Digri, which is a little place about, I suppose, 80-100 miles from Calcutta, to the west of Calcutta, to 159 Squadron, which was my first experience of real squadron life. And it was just after they'd converted to Liberators from Wellingtons. And I was a second pilot, of course. But we were operating from there. But I only did two trips, two operations as a second pilot. And then I did a bit of flying around the place with one of the senior pilots, and I was made a first pilot, captain, and was given a crew. I remember my first captain was a chap called, I think it was Alcock, who was an Australian cricketer, and I thought he was a Sheffield Shield cricketer, which is the sort of state competition in Australia. But your husband has looked him up and there's no name. But he was a lovely chap, marvellous chap, a real, you know, sort of, I can remember with real affection. You know, on the first trip, we were bombing the Andaman Islands, Port Blair. Oh, good, that's interesting. There was quite a bit of anti-aircraft fire. And as we approached, he said, "Now, Pat," he said, "now, it's a very important job for you. Here's a map. I want you to watch the ground and pinpoint where the anti-aircraft guns are firing from." And I did it quite religiously, looking out, you know, and they were boom, boom, boom. And I wasn't at all frightened because I had this job to do. And I think it was, I don't think it was meant anything at all. But he was that sort of chap, very, very thoughtful. And anyway, so then I said I did a couple of operations. And then I suppose I spent about 3 or 4 weeks flying around the spare aircraft with an instructor, and then he checked me out. And
What planes were you flying?
Liberators.
How did the transition from going from Tiger Moths to Liberators feel?
Well, there was quite a space between the two. But there was a Tiger Moth, which is just a single engine, very small light aircraft. Then the Airspeed Oxford, which was a twin-engined aircraft, then the Liberator, which was four engines. And I didn't know what to think when I went there. I'd heard the Liberator was a very difficult aircraft to fly, and honestly, I never found it at all difficult. I don't think any of us did, but it had a reputation with the Americans of being a bit difficult to fly. And but the thing that was most striking about that period was that when I went to 159, I just thought it was just an ordinary everyday squadron, and of course I found very quickly that it wasn't. It had a wonderful CO who had only just taken over when I got there, a chap called Blackburn, Wing Commander Blackburn, who was a absolutely outstanding man. At that time, I believe he was the second most decorated chap in the Air Force after Group Captain Cheshire, and he was a wonderful man. He was a real leader. He was, you know, he was a bit standoffish. He was never one of the lads. I mean, we never dream of treating him as one of the lads. But everyone had the greatest affection for him and a great, you know, admiration for him. And the morale in the squadron was absolutely marvellous. We just knew we were the best, and it was then he started doing all sorts of things with us which were quite new at the time. The first thing was he said he doesn't know why we're carrying all this excess weight. Why have we got so many turrets when there's nothing, when you're not going to be fired on by Japanese aircraft, because the Japanese were, Air Force just wasn't to be seen at that time. And so we took all the turrets off, except the rear turret, which saved a lot of weight. And then he increased the the weight at which we'd take off at. And I think the maximum roll-up weight of the Liberator, according to the manufacturer, was 57,000 pounds. And he started off at 64,000 pounds, and we finished up at 68,000 pounds. That's 14,000 pounds heavier than the, 14 short tons heavier than the manufacturer recommended. And, so we went farther. We flew much longer trips than other people. And he said, we're not going to muck about dropping bombs on little bridges from 10,000 feet. That's hopeless. We're going low. So we developed our own sort of, in a small way, sort of dive bombing technique. And that was a very exciting time. And all our operations were something different.
So that was rather groundbreaking stuff, really.
It was. Oh, it was. Absolutely. Well, I think it was. I mean, we're doing trips of over 18 hours, 20 hours, I think, sometimes. I haven't got my logbooks, but I'm sure it was well over 18 hours. We flew to Penang and laid mines in Penang Harbour from near Calcutta, which is about 18 hours a round trip. And we didn't just take one little bomb. We took quite a few. And
what was your rank at the time?
I was a flying officer then. I became a flight lieutenant in beginning of 45. But it was a very exciting time. We had a squadron song which came to me the other day when I was thinking about this morning. Can I try and sing?
Please.
So it went something like this. Mining Penang, dive bombing Bangkok, low-level strafing at Phitsa New Lock, over the Pani and over the hill. If no one else gets there, then 159 will. 16 kites airborne we'll try for. 16 kites airborne we'll get. that was a squadron song.
Would that be the first time you've thought of that in something?
Oh, it came back to me. Well, I think I thought it once or twice before, but it came back to me the other day. Funny. And we really thought we were very, very good. And then when Cheshire was going to take charge of Tiger Force, which was going to be the Air Force activity over Japan, he came to us, and I think he knew Blackburn, quite well, and Blackburn said, I will show you how we do it here, and he picked on me to take him out. There were just a few of us in the aircraft, and Blackburn and Group Captain Cheshire, and I did a couple of bobby runs on the practice range, with them on board, and I don't know whether I hit anything, but Cheshire seemed to be quite impressed. He didn't say anything, but he seemed to be impressed.
Would that have been in 1944?
No, that would be early 45, I think. Early 45, I think. But you've got to ask me how I felt. It was a very exciting time, of course, as it all was. But the only time I had any feelings other than excitement was this when we were doing one of our low-level strafing things. We used to go out for targets of opportunity. The odd little fishing boat, we'd try and sink that. And if we saw any activity on the roads, we'd go down and try and hit them. But this Phitsanulok thing, Petain Lop was a junction on the railway from Bangkok up to Rangoon. And there was this train just coming out of Petain Lop, and so we went down and had a look at it, and it was packed full of